So I'd like to welcome our next speaker, Dr. Martin Yeomans, who's a professor in experimental psychology at the University of Sussex. Dr. Yeomans has published extensively on the topic of appetite and nutrient and flavor learning, and the links for appetites for foods and for other rewards like alcohol and drugs of abuse. The title of Dr. Yeoman's talk is Impulsivity, a Risk Factor for Obesity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for inviting me. I've not been to Montreal, and I've, as a psychologist, you know, so much of the interest in motivation, which has dominated my life, was founded by people working here. So it's like coming to the guru place to me. It's great. That's the good news. The bad news was I thought, this is fantastic. They've invited me. Then I looked at the title I was given. And I've worked on human appetite for rather too many years now and have known to work on satiety, flavour. And I had this title to do with impulsivity, which kind of threw me a bit. And to put this in perspective, we've been working on appetite for 20 years. I've been working, or at least some of my group got me involved in impulsivity for the last four or five. So this is stuff I haven't talked about before. So this is cool. I get a chance to say something I didn't usually talk about. And I had to put some pretty pictures of Brighton up, just in case you've no idea where the University of Sussex is, the south coast of England. Actually, the conversations that have just been going on are like the perfect introduction for me, because I want to try to give you an idea of, first of all, why we need to talk about impulsivity. Everyone's been talking about it this afternoon, so I don't really need to say much there. The thing which was going to be debatable is, what is impulsivity? We've just had that question, really. How do you define this? What sort of behaviours are involved? And I'm knowing that I was coming after Antoine, I decided I'm going to keep out of the brain as much as possible and talk behaviour today. So that's what I'm going to do. Okay. Very quickly, why should we, in a meeting on brain and obesity, talk about impulsivity? Well, John Blundell set the scene beautifully for me earlier today. We know that people vary enormously in their propensity to become obese. Although we've got this obesogenic environment, everyone loves this term, not everybody is fat. A good friend of John's and mine, James Stubbs, said this. Isn't it remarkable when you go to America that not everyone's obese? And actually, that is not such a jokey point. It's a serious point. What is it? And John was talking about these many, many phenotypes which underlie the differences in obese potential between individuals. And I'm going to argue that impulsivity, or rather different components of impulsive behavior, might be one of those phenotypic characteristics. I use the word phenotype very carefully here, and because, again, I'm not going to go into genetics, but it was really interesting to see ideas about genetics which could be related to this. I've also John used his own slide. I like this slide from Bouchard on this point, that we must remember that there are people who are going to stay thin no matter what the environment changes. And perhaps the point which was not on John's slide earlier, there have also been people who, obesity isn't something that's just been around for 20 years. It's increased in that time. But again, there are people who have a genotype or phenotype which promotes obesity regardless of the food environment. But I think probably impulsivity might be one of these factors which is allowing some people to put on weight. Okay, let's cut to the chase. What is impulsivity? This is the sort of textbook definition you get, but I'm going to break it down a little bit more than that. It's been used as a global term for rash decision-making. To do something with a lack of planning, without forethought, without consideration of the consequences of your actions. But actually, when you go out and study these behaviours in detail, you see they break down into a number of different components. And I'm going to try to talk behaviourally about these different components. A lot of the mention of impulsivity I've heard here today seems more to me to be impulsiveness. This is where people are aware that they're not good at this stuff. And the usual way of measuring this stuff is to use a questionnaire, a self-report questionnaire, and clearly you're only going to score highly on a self-report measure of something like impulsivity if you actually know this is you. The most widely used, or one of the, there are multiple questionnaires here. The one which is well used is the Barrett Impulsiveness Scale. It calls it impulsivity, but I like impulsiveness because it's a measure of self-reflection. Things like, don't tick yourselves off, please, as you do this. I don't want people sort of getting sort of paranoid during my talk. I plan tasks carefully. Actually, if that was true, this talk would have been written earlier, thinking on it. I do things without thinking. I get electric shocks when I'm not looking. That was scary. These sorts of questions break down into different scales of different components of the way we realise that we're not good at controlling ourselves when perhaps we think we should. And the evidence is, and I'll go through the evidence, is that if you use these questionnaire measures, then there's a relationship with body size, which is interesting. But things get more interesting when we get into actual behavioural tests of impulsivity. And again, my life's been made a little bit easier by people talking about some of those, although concentrating on a failure to inhibit behaviour. There are now a large number of specific behavioural tests being used across addiction research, across other areas of cognitive development research, which have been developed specifically to measure areas where people might differ in their impulse control. And the three I want to talk about are reward reactivity. Reward reactivity kind of sounds awfully like this dopamine thing we've been talking about a lot today. But essentially, it's thinking about the extent to which, when offered an immediate reward, it cannot be resisted. And the classic behavioural test is the delay discounting task. So if I said, I've got some money in my pocket, would you like $5 right now? Or I can give you $10 in a week, which are you going to go for? Which is your preference? And people have used these tasks to equate a point where actually you're indifferent. The situation where the amount of money you're offered now is the point where you can't make a clear decision. But most people, you know, when offered a small reward now, a big one later, will say, oh, the big one, thank you. We ran this with some students. We had, would you like £9.50 now or £10 in a year's time? And some people went for the £10 in a year. That's very, very unimpulsive. Amongst the same population, we offered 50 pence now or £10 in a year's time, and people wanted the 50 pence immediately. So there is terrific variability in people's response to a question, like delay discounting. This one is slightly different and isn't talked about in the literature so much yet. This is one of the newest developments, I think, in impulsivity research. And it's a recognition that another impulsive trait or component is an inability to reflect over a decision. This task, I don't know if you've seen this task, this is the famous matching familiar figures task used in cognitive research for a long time. You see one stimulus up here, and all you've got to do on numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is tell me which one's the same on the bottom. This isn't a hard version. There's no tricks here. You've all got good eyes. Well, hopefully good enough eyes. Call out a number. Yeah, cool. Easy, isn't it? Okay. So how's this impulsivity? Well, if you make a fast decision and get it wrong, you don't give yourself time to reflect on this, then you're acting more impulsively. And although traditionally this was used as a more intelligency-like test, we can now show this measures an element of impulsivity. And finally, the one I don't need to explain so much, the inhibition task, the go-no-go task, you've heard of this already, beautifully described earlier in relation to ducks with children. Our version is slightly different. You get a stream of digits on the screen like this, so you might get 27685. And then half a second or so later, another one comes up. It's exactly the same. If they match, you hit a response button, unless it's something different. So the next one might be 37695. You don't respond. But if it's 37695 in red, you absolutely mustn't hit the button, although it's the same number last time. So it's a slightly tricky task. Most of the trials are the same, but occasionally there's a stop task. And it's can you stop yourself? That's the inhibition test. Okay, so how does this relate to impulsivity, to obesity? Well, if you take the trait questionnaire type measures, then impulsiveness correlates positively with BMI. There's a couple of studies showing that. So there isn't such a big literature with actual obese patients here. We're more interested in saying then, well, what is it? What component of behaviour might be turning this sort of impulsiveness awareness, aware impulsive behaviour, into weight gain? And so we started looking at measures of current eating. And following up some earlier work by Leek and Spinella, we looked at the Barrett Impulsiveness Scale and the three-factor eating questionnaire. And again, this was beautifully introduced earlier. I don't need to explain it to everybody. But the three-factor eating questionnaire disinhibition scale, this measure of tend to overeat, correlates positively with this impulsiveness measure. And then the group we're doing most of the human research in this area at the moment, Chantal Nederkorn's group in Maastricht, had a PhD student, Guerrieri, and she got people to measure food intake in the laboratory and showed that, again, the higher they scored on the Barrett scale, the more they ate in the lab in a taste test. So you've got impulsiveness causes you to eat more in real life. You're aware of that, and it relates to BMI. So that kind of ties in with the idea that there's a risk factor here. If we go to the inhibitory response measure, the go-no-go task, then there's lots of reports, again, that there's a difference between obese and normals. Again, mainly coming from the Maastricht group. Chantal's done a good number of studies showing that obese adults score worse on go-no-go tasks. They're less able to press the stop cue than a normal weight. Another study came out last year in overweight children showing, again, a correlation between body weight and go-no-go performance. The bigger the kid, the less able to show an ability to stop than responding. And most recently, I thought what was really nice was the first study I've seen combining go-no-go and neural imaging in children in this context. And here we've got a relationship between BMI and response on the go-no-go task. You can see more rapid responses, so more impulsive responses as you get bigger. And now if you go to the orbital frontal cortex and look at the relationship there, again, changes in activation in the orbital frontal cortex in relation to performance on this task as a function of BMI. So inhibitory responding certainly seems to be related to tendency to put on weight. If we look at reward reactivity, the delayed discounting task, Weller's group came out with these data. You've got obese and non-obese women, and again, more rapid delayed discounting in the obese than the non-obese. So again, they're going for the immediate reward, not delaying, looking for the larger delayed reward. And we found the same when you look at three-factor eating questionnaire, taking groups who are high or low on disinhibition. Then again, the high disinhibition group, the ones who say they tend to overeat, again show impaired delayed discounting. So we've got a reward reactivity measure. Not all studies find this, and it seems less consistent than the go-no-go, but it is there. The one which surprised me was this task. It was my colleague, Mike Morgan, who looks at impulsivity in relation to drug abuse, and particularly ecstasy use, who's found this task very interesting in relation to kids using ecstasy, who persuaded me this was a task and an approach we should look at. It turns out this is very, very positive in this context, that if you're poor at reflecting, rash in decision making. First of all, it relates to overweight in children. Interestingly, when you look at the three-factor eating questionnaire disinhibition scale, in six studies in a row, Margie Leach, my PhD student, found differences between high and low groups on this task. And most excitingly, if you gave them a taste of food before they did the task, then you can actually make them more impulsive. So being exposed to a food cue actually increases impulsive, rash behaviour, which is the first demonstration, I think, that we've come across of that phenomenon. If we compare all these results against other impulsive-type tendencies, there's a few places where there isn't data yet. There's some holes in this, but you can see there's a pretty consistent pattern. The self-report measures, we're finding across eating Also relate to drug addiction, of course, more impulsiveness, self-reflected impulsiveness is more associated with higher drug use, with gambling, with ADHD. I'm not going to talk about ADHD much because it's not my area, but I know other people here do know about this area. But you can see this fits with a whole idea, and I think backs up what Antoine was just saying, that there are individual differences in tendency to be overreactive to rewards, to be less able to reflect. And actually what really attracted me was listening to this morning when we had this comment about whether you're in a reflective mode decision-making, where you're taking a long time, or whether you're working on a very short-term reactive way. It seems that perhaps that cognitive difference might be a good way of thinking about why some people are more impulsive than others. I'm not going to go into huge amounts on neural circuitry. I knew Anton was coming first and you'd have heard lots of it. I'm going to do a plug for the orbital frontal cortex here, because I knew he'd talk about insula and others. But it strikes me that based on what I know from Trevor Robbins' group in work in Cambridge, and their work particularly on serotonergic systems, that the OVT is very interesting in this context, mainly because not only is it involved in decision-making, we know it's very heavily implicated in delayed discounting, and then turning the tail, we know it's very heavily involved in flavour hedonics and flavour formation. It's the first point Ed Rolls tells us, where taste and smell come together in formation of flavour. So overreacting to a food cue could be explained by cortex activity in this way. It's speculation, but it's worth saying. Not long to go. Is this a cause or consequence of obesity is a question I don't think we can resolve from these data. And that's important here. If we simply compare obese and normal groups, do we know whether the obese are showing more impulsive behaviour because they're now obese, because their eating behaviour has changed their brain chemistry related to reward, and that's then resulted in impulsivity? Or was it one of the factors which drove them to overconsume or have a negative energy balance in the first place? I don't think we can tell. It's correlation, not causation. So what would be interesting to know is to look at what happens if you lose weight. And I don't know any studies in this area, and I felt this was a good point to plug this idea. Could it be that, for example, that successful weight reduction programs should be focusing on better impulse control? We think of the normal weight participants we look at who score high on disinhibition and overeating measures and always eat too much in our lab, much to the chagrin of my food bill, are basically latent obese. If they carry on doing in real world what they do in our lab, they're going to put weight on. So that does imply causation. So by looking at a preclinical group, you might be able to identify those people who are most prone to weight gain at a behavioural level. And most interestingly, again, Guerreri's PhD thesis in Maastricht found some really nice effects that you could induce impulsivity in the lab, and if you induced impulsivity in an experimental way and then offered food, then the extent to which food increased, food intake was eaten after the test, depended on how much impulsivity you generated. So this kind of suggests that causality might be there, that impulsivity seems to drive short-term food intake rather than the other way around. But that needs to be followed up. And again, our food cue exposure stuff is interesting. The study, which I didn't have time to put a slide up for, was we gave people a sort of which of these foods would you like to eat later menu before they did the impulsivity test. And that was enough to make them act more impulsively. And then we gave them the food afterwards, and sure enough, the more impulsive they'd acted in the test, the more they consumed afterwards as well. So there's some interesting relationships. And it ties in beautifully with what's in studies of drug abuse, where it's recognised that impulsivity is both a risk factor for the onset of drug abuse, but once you become a drug user, you become more impulsive and therefore more prone to continue with that behaviour. Okay, a couple of future research questions for you to think about. I talked about this in general with obesity. I could have targeted the binge eating disorder group in particular, where, for example, Marcy Gluck, working at Columbia, has got some nice data showing obese binge eaters are different in impulsivity from non-obese. And should we now be segmenting obese groups, thinking about the specific aspects of their phenotype which got them to where they are, and not treating them all as just large people who need to lose weight? Does successful weight management reduce impulsivity? Will be interesting. Can we actually change behavioural programs to target that aspect of an individual's personality to help them become successful weight controllers? Or should we be looking at the neural substates and thinking about this in terms of future drug treatments? I think those are all questions that should be on the research agenda for the next few years. Having heard that the MRC might be willing to fund more of this sort of thing, I'm now going to partly writing my grant while I was sitting over there. If that's been fun. So, quick conclusions. The data shows quite consistently that obese are more impulsive than normal weight people. It's not restricted to one subtype of impulsivity. That was a slight disappointment in our research. We felt that would have been very helpful to have said, well, this type of impulsivity seems to be the one driving overeating and weight gain. I'm still not convinced on causation, but the emerging data in non-obese groups that you can induce impulsivity in eating suggests that causation might be likely, and I look forward to your comments. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much. Do you have any questions?
Thanks very much. It's a great talk. I just wanted to suggest that some evidence that might contribute to the idea of correlation versus causality is Walter Mischel's classic marshmallow studies. And as you will recall, the ability of children to defer eating one marshmallow in order to gain two, he's now followed up those children 30, 40 years later. And the ones who were unable to wait for two marshmallows just do terribly, well, they do much worse in life on a whole variety of areas. And I think including a risk of obesity. I think it's related to BMI. So although it's observational, nonetheless, I think what he was looking at is very similar to, well, his impulsivity.
That's really interesting. Thanks for reminding me of that. I forgot those studies completely. Yeah, that bit. I'd forgotten just how that. It just shows that we don't look far in the facts sometimes. Yeah, that'd be cool to look at.
I have a quick question and a longer question. The quick question is, do you screen your individuals for ADHD?
Yes, they. All our participants have to go through. Well, we don't do a full medical screen, but they have to comply to. We have a set of a criteria they have to sign off that they. So they won't have had a clear diagnosis of ADHD. I guess we don't have a specific test to see if there's any characteristics like that in there, but given the size of the samples and they tend to be university undergraduates, I suspect that's unlikely. But good question. Thanks.
The other question is regarding impulsivity. So there are two aspects, at least. One you could see as value. You're unable to assign proper value to different stimuli. For example, if you assign too much value to rewarding stimuli, you may be bad at delayed discounting, and you will appear impulsive in many situations. Another way to be impulsive is to have a working memory problem, where you can't keep the different goals in mind accurately. It's not an assigning value issue. It's an inability to properly keep many different things in mind, and that would impair your matching task much more than your delayed discounting task.
Except that there's no memory element in the matching task. Everything stays on screen.
No, but you have to. Yeah, but you have to constantly monitor and work things.
Yeah. I mean, I must say, having encountered this sort of lack of reasoning type element of impulsivity, I think a better task is now needed. I think Mike Morgan's right that this is different at a cognitive level from inhibition or from reward value. But I absolutely agree. I don't think it's the ideal task. I was just really... it was one of those things where you think, oh, well, I'd better put it into the test, and then it came out over and over again. It's the one thing which discriminated high eating, and that was really surprising. But,
Yes, hi. I was wondering, listening to you and relating more to the earlier talk, you mentioned about the quick, rapid response, and you know our lives have become much more fast and hurried. I was wondering if anyone's looked at that, if that has anything to do, because we're solicited in the sense to react much more rapidly over and over and over again. Maybe that is one of the factors, I don't know.
It's a lovely comment. I describe myself this week as being in firefighting mode, trying to get things done so I could get here. And you're absolutely right. We live in a world which runs at a very high pace. Whether you can actually do research to test that, I think, is more difficult, because you'd need to encounter populations who aren't running at that level to be able to make the... the reaction time test, you have to get them doing as fast as they can. And the stress test stuff we've done, the effects of stress on eating are very complex. And some of the tasks we've used to stress people in our lab probably have an element of cognitive impulsivity. I mean, nasty things like saying, you know, is 952, I want you to subtract 17 from it repeatedly, and I'll, if you make a mistake, you'll have to stop and start again. Go. And, you know, and you're staring stone-faced at them, and, you know, it's you feel really horrible doing this. So actually, well, it depends.
Dana?
I love your flavor nutrient conditioning work, but this is great too. I'm sad you weren't talking about it, but this is fantastic. I'm wondering, I'm sure you're aware there's some animal studies where rats treated with addictive drugs become more impulsive on rat tests of impulsivity. I noticed you focused on the question of weight loss and change in impulsivity, but has anybody looked at weight gain and impulsivity or repeated tests of these and tracked it?
In rats?
No, in humans.
Has anyone tracked? No, no one's tracked across a weight gain program. I guess this work out, there isn't a great deal of this work out there. That's kind of what attracted me there. Because so many people are working on addiction and impulsivity, and it's very much where the addiction world's going. And the reason, as you say, you haven't heard much of this from me, is I spend most of my time doing other things. But it would be good to do that in rats, though. That would be much easier to do, because there are some superb, you know, methods of making rats fat quickly. So it sounds really sad, but, you know, I have ethical problems about trying to make people fat just to see
Except
if that makes
weight.
Them impulsive, because knowing that they might not lose the weight again. I think my ethics committee would look askance at me. But,
one last question.
Have you looked at smoking or ex-smokers? And why I ask is there is a strong correlation between smoking and developing diabetes, especially ex-smokers. So do you know if your participants were either smokers, ex-smokers, which would be also in the addiction side of things?
I don't know whether the Maastricht group screened for smoking. We only used people who smoked less than five cigarettes a week, which basically is non-smokers. But there is, again, a literature on smoking and impulsivity out there. It's not the same as with other drugs. I mean, the relationships within drugs are quite complicated. And, for example, the reflective MFFT one, it seems very specific to ecstasy users. We don't see many effects in other users, and that's kind of intriguing.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Just a quick pedantic point, if I may.
Oh, please do.
So the Mazur equation, which among the simple expressions is as good a description for discounting as any, the hyperbolic function, it has two parameters, a scale parameter and a shape parameter. The one that describes how quickly value drops off over time as you push the reward into the future is the shape parameter. And that's what's presumably picked up by these measures of impulsiveness. The scale parameter is how big the reward is. And in the equation, these two parameters are mathematically independent. Now, the provocative idea that I think both of us have played with is that the person becomes changed when they're exposed to a large imminent reward. And that exposure changes both parameters. It makes the reward is big, but it also makes the value decrease more quickly over time, so that the more immediate reward is the more useful one. But we wouldn't want to get tangled up in our parameters. So.
Well, actually, I don't know. I think that you could get a much clearer insight of what's happening in those using a better model. I was slightly struck when we moved into this area. In honesty, that work was driven by my wonderful Iranian postdoc, Cyrus Mabini, who'd done his work on 5-HT systems and impulsivity in rats at Nottingham, who'd been working on delay discounting in that context, and it was brought the same models with him. But it seemed to me they were ready to be updated. So I think if we could talk about that, that would be cool. I guess one issue I had when I was looking at delay discounting, it's always money rewards. And so we ran some studies with food rewards, and that completely backfires. Because if you've got a single restrained eater and you say, would you rather, you know, a small donut now or a huge bowl of donuts in a year's time, they'd just say, I'm a restrained eater, I'll go for the small one. Of course, you know, if you give them food, they'll eat lots. And so there's a sort of, you kind of have a cognitive overlay of what I think I should say, rather than, with money, people are funnier about it. So, anyway,
thank you very much.